Jodie Hoffman with you from the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, and welcoming back our Law Matters program for 2015 to new listeners of the program. This program has been coming to you right back from since 2010, a fortnightly program from the Aboriginal Legal Service here in WA, profiling the services that we provide, giving you an insight into some of the staff who work at the ALS, and of course talking about very topical issues to do with the justice system here in Western Australia. Got a big first program for 2015 coming your way today. Going to be having a chat very shortly with CEO of the ALS, Dennis Eggington, popping in to just have a yarn with us about what the year ahead holds within justice circles here. A big year of budget cuts as well, which may have an effect on our legal services around the country. This week, though, a huge week because, of course, if you haven't heard the news already today, today was the release of the 2015 Close the Gap Progress and Priorities Report that coincided with the Prime Minister's annual report card to Parliament on progress made to reduce Indigenous disadvantage. So we'll be talking a little bit about some of the findings of the Closing the Gap campaign, how far we've come and how far there is to go. Director of Legal Services Peter Collins pops in for a chat later on this hour to talk about what's happening within our criminal unit across Western Australia. We're also going to be meeting a young fella who's going to be letting us know all about the Murich Lions program, and it's run through a footy club here in Perth, so stay tuned for more information on that, particularly of interest to our young fellas aged between 11 and 15. This is Law Matters on Aboriginal Radio, Noongar Radio 100.9 FM, coming to you through the Noongar Radio Studios of Perth, Western Australia, but also broadcast through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour, and welcome to the program for the first time for 2015, CEO of the Aboriginal Legal Service, Dennis Eggington. How are you, Dennis? How's the break been? We haven't had a program on since December, so it is good to be back, hey?
Yeah, 2015, Jodie, is going to be a good year for all of us. We got some challenges ahead, of course, and you know, life is tough out there on the streets for our mob that finding it hard to find shelter and a place to stop, and our young mums struggling with some young kids and doing it hard. But, you know, our resilience and our strength, I think, will make sure that we once again make achievements and gains through 2015. It's good to have the show back on after a bit of a break over Christmas. Always good out there talking to our mob and letting you know what's going on. And we've got to thank Aboriginal Radio, Noongar Radio, for the opportunity it presents to us and others to tell our stories. And I know that we've got some current things today, Joe, that we're going to have to talk to people about, not so much about the legal service, but about what's going on in Aboriginal affairs across this country. And I think that, you know, there is this growing strength among our community with the protests over in Canberra recently, and even in our court systems where we've got our young people walking in and declaring their sovereignty. So there is this growing strength among our mob about who we are and what we expect and where we want to be in this country of ours.
And I guess it is a tough time for a lot of organisations, and probably a pretty anxious wait over the next few months. And we spoke about this quite a lot on our program last year, that there will be more budget announcement cuts made in May this year. And it's a bit of an anxious time for legal services around the country, isn't it, Den?
Yeah, it certainly is. We, for our listeners, all legal services around Australia are facing significant funding cuts, as with medical services and Aboriginal programs in general. It's not going to be easy. The reality is that our Aboriginal organisations are the preferred employers of our mob. So at any time, a legal service or a medical service can have 50, 60% of its staff, or maybe even more, that are our own people. And, of course, funding cuts will then affect our families and people's ability to earn a bit of money and get some decent food on the table and, you know, a shelter over our heads.
We hope that there'll be some leeway made in some of the more prominent issues affecting our mob here in Western Australia as we look to the months and year ahead. But a big day in politics, well, a big couple of weeks in politics, I guess, Dennis. But today, importantly, the Closing the Gap campaign is urging the federal government to focus on greater access to primary healthcare services to detect, treat and manage chronic health conditions in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. And campaign co-chairs Mick Gooder and Kirsty Parker today released the 2015 Close the Gap Progress and Priorities Report. And unfortunately, not a heap of progress.
No, and I think there lies our problem, that is that there is a clear message coming from government, particularly the Prime Minister, out to the rest of Australia, is that we're the cause of all our own woes. It's really Aboriginal people that are the problem, and there is no real sense of partnership, no real sense of empowerment, no sense of self-determination, no talks about rights and treaties. There is this benevolence about how good the government is in handing over a few dollars, but you can't take $500 million worth of programs from Aboriginal communities and cause the disruption and then still expect positive outcomes in closing the gap.
This is the seventh Closing the Gap report, and some of the key points that came out of today's report was that there was no progress at all in halving the gap in Indigenous employment outcomes, small gains in Indigenous life expectancy, early childhood enrolment target wasn't met, no overall progress on halving the reading and numeracy gap, a slower progress on infant mortality gap, and on track to halve the gap in Year 12 attainment. Would have hoped for a little bit better than that, hey?
Especially with Prime Minister, that is Prime Minister for Aboriginal people. Probably about time that Tony Abbott closed his gap and started doing a little bit more as far as the empowerment of our own communities to manage and run our own affairs. You know, we have got the strength, we've got the will, we've got the knowledge, and we've really now had, a whole lot of our mob who are constantly coming up with great ideas and great ways of doing business and really being able to empower our community. But unfortunately, it is resource needed, and you only get resources that are handed by government. That government control really is something at the moment that is a major hinder in our advancement and our ability to, get on top of our health problems, get on top of our justice problems, strengthen our families. There's no reason why every single Aboriginal family, every single Noongar family hasn't got their own house to live in that is a part and parcel of any deal with government, any deal with the Australian people, the social contract that we should have with this country should determine a level of resources that we manage and run ourselves. And I just know there's so many great people out there who have got the strength and courage and the wisdom and the experience that, if we were able to manage the situation ourselves, we would certainly close the gap in a number of years. We'd probably be even doing better than mainstream society treats its poor and its disadvantaged.
You're tuned to Law Matters on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM, broadcasting to you out of the Noongar Radio studios in Perth. Jody Hoffman and Dennis Eggington with you today on our first return program for 2015, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA. It's funny, Dennis, when you think about reports, more speeches, more promises, and I was just thinking that this month marks 7 years since the National Apology, which is incredible to think that it's 7 years ago that Kevin Rudd delivered the apology to Australia's Indigenous peoples. Time flies, doesn't it?
No, it does, and you reflect on those things, and sometimes, I feel like saying, well, I apologise. I apologise that our people were here first. I apologise that we resisted invasion. I apologise that we have survived the Holocaust, because I don't understand why this country continues to deny the First Nations peoples in this group our rightful place in the country. I don't know if they're frightened of us. I don't know if they're just shamed at what happened in the past, that they don't want to share resources. So, you know, apologies so many years ago hasn't really changed the attitude of the vast majority of Australian people. You'll always have a number of people on side, people more informed, people who are got more of a left swing to life and feel that, you know, a government or a civil society that shares its wealth among all and not make a small number of people very wealthy and take most of the resources is a better society. And but I don't really understand what it is that we've done wrong to be treated so bad. A guy called Malcolm X once said that if it's not those who benefit from a wrong fix that wrong, then no one else will. And it's now time for Australia to fix that wrong and to get this social contract back on board and look at processes of treaty and deals, genuine deals that are about empowerment, about self-determination, and about sharing the management of this country, which we did for tens of thousands of years before anyone else got here, did a good job on it, and that's our rightful place. That's what this country needs. That's what's missing is the fourth dimension, the spiritual connection of country. You know, 2,000 generations of our mob are buried in this soil, and if that isn't some kind of special spiritual real physical connection between man, country, and the fourth dimension, our spiritual world, then nothing else is. You know, the whole country is just 2,000 generations of our people died, buried, bled, and are buried in this country here.
When you look at the relationship in Western Australia between Aboriginal people, First Peoples, and what's happened over the last 240 years, people in chains, it is difficult to know what it's going to take for current governments to actually have some meaningful progress when there's so much more demand increasing on services like ours, like the Aboriginal Legal Service, so more people are needing legal services. It seems to be accelerating all the time.
Absolutely, but the horror of it is that the general population actually feels safer because the jails are full of black people. They feel safer though, knowing that, that we're over-policed and we're put in jails and that... And how you change that mindset. I can't remember what the issue was, Jody, but the Premier this morning made a backflip on a particular government position. I can't remember what it was, he said, well, that's what the people want. I listen to the people, so that won't go ahead. I can't remember what the issue was. But anyway, the point is that until the general population of WA say to the government, this is no longer acceptable, we want you to do something about it, no one's going to give a rat's. It's only our mob that... once again, we've learnt to survive in that type of an environment. Yeah, I look at those old photos of Wadjimup and of the Kimberleys and the Goldfields and the Pilbara, where our mob are all big long line of people all with iron chains around their neck and stuff, and you know, I look at the pictures of the prisons and they're just full of Aboriginal men, and you know, it's no different. It's no different today. It's been the same way that our relationship has been for 240 years. It has to change.
Northern Territory Labor Senator Nova Peris said that the Closing the Gap report released today showed that Indigenous Australians had been let down. And to quote her, she said, when you look at the Closing the Gap report, when you look at the incarceration rates, when you talk about juvenile reinvestment, that's been neglected. We always talk about closing the gap in educational and health outcomes. That's all gone backwards. There's not a lot to smile about on a day like today.
Well, Nova is absolutely correct. I mean, it's a terrible indictment on our country that, you know, with the Prime Minister going around saying that he's a Prime Minister for Aboriginal people, and all of their advisers putting new ways forward for a new involvement with Aboriginal people, and we're going backwards. I can only see one thing missing in the whole big picture, and that is this rights-based approach, this necessity for us to manage and run our own affairs through a proper treaty process. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but we haven't ever tried that in this country. All we've done is be a benevolent group of people who have had handouts from government. And while you have government money, you have no control over anything. The time when we have our own resources and our own money's coming in and we do things our way is going to be true empowerment. This way is your cap in hand, you jump through hoops, you take cuts, and then in the end government tell you how and what to do and control the outcome of the money, and if they don't like it, they take it from you. That's no way to treat a whole group of people in the society that we have, and it's the way that we're treated.
Dennis, the 7th of January this year marked 40 years since the Aboriginal Legal Service in Western Australia became an incorporated body. This was celebrated with a big gala event in Perth at the end of last year. You've been CEO for 19 of those 40 years. What do you see the future holding for the organisation? And particularly, let's look for this coming year, what lays ahead?
Well, there are big challenges, as we said. You know, taking $1.5 million from our budget will mean losing 30 staff or more out of a staff of 100. It might mean closing a large number of our regional offices, our smaller offices. It might mean that we stop doing all work in the metropolitan area. It just is mind-blowing to think of what the future might lie. Then again, it does present us with an opportunity to go back to our membership, go back to the community and say, we can't be who we were for 40 years. It's impossible. What do you see and what do you think might be a new Aboriginal legal service to take us into the next 40 years? And we may have to think outside of the square for that. We actually might have to think of completely doing business in a different way. And, you know, if the vast majority of our resources are tied up in what we call our magistrates' courts, pumping out and managing criminality and not really making any positive social change in the community, then, you know, that might be something our community says, well, we don't want you doing that anymore. You know, we want you to really challenge the big injustices and the discrimination, look after families and do a lot of family law. So, but we'll be there and we'll listen to what people want.
I just want to end with, on a positive note, Dennis, I know that at the 40th anniversary celebrations, it was an incredible buzz to see some of the old faces who were involved in the very early years and transitioning right through to 2014 who'd been involved with our service. One of those people who was involved very early as a field officer and in later years, as over the last few years, as a prisoner support officer was Uncle Sam Diner. And what an incredible person. And Uncle Sam popped into the office yesterday to say good day to a few people and brought his CD with him. How good was it to see Sam?
It was really good to see Sam and know that, at his age, and I don't know how old Unc is, but he's probably got to be 70. And, he's full of life, he's bouncing around, and here he is producing a record and coming up with a number of his own written songs on that country gospel. Is just a wonderful, wonderful thing to see.
And we'll be having a yarn with Sam Diner on Law Matters. Not this month, it's a busy month for Sam, and he's got a few things on the boil, but in the coming months, do stay tuned. We'll be having him in the studio for a yarn about his reflections of the ALS and what keeps him busy now, because he's still very active within the prison system, talking to our young fellas in there. But we'll be playing some of his music for you as well. Just one of the many amazing characters who've been involved in the legal service, hey?
Pastor Sam Diner, who's forever putting out the gospel and making sure that he cares about every single one of us. It's he's an amazing offer.
Dennis Eggington, thank you for your time on our very first program for 2015. Remember, listeners, this program does come to you each fortnight at this time on Noongar Radio. You can catch it on Sunday nights as well when it's repeated, and it's also broadcast the following Tuesday through the National Indigenous Radio Service. So good to get our word out to our people across the country. Dennis, we'll let you go. A busy time, and we'll have some music. And when we return, Peter Collins, Director of the Legal Services, joins us to talk about what's happening in his area of the ALS. And we're also going to be meeting a young fella by the name of Rowan Blee to let us know all about the Moorditch Lines program. This is the Law Matters program. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour. And joining us in the studio, Peter Collins, the Director of Legal Services at the ALS of WA. Welcome back to Law Matters 2015, Pete. How was your break?
I had a great break, thanks, Jodie, and thanks for having me back.
It was too long, was it? You just felt like coming back quicker than you did?
Jumping out of my skin.
And what a year to come back to. We were just speaking with Dennis Eggington, of course, about the uncertainty, I guess, for our legal services around the country on the next few months with the impending budget. And we did speak about closing the gap, but I'm sure you've got a few things to say about the report that was tabled in Parliament today as well.
Oh, look, I do, Jodie, because the report's so incredibly disappointing in terms of outcomes for Aboriginal people. And, you know, we heard Tony Abbott say on TV and radio this morning that closing the gap, the statement itself, is so important because it's essential for Aboriginal people to fully enter into their rightful inheritance as the first Australians and as first-class citizens of this country. But by every measure, almost, Aboriginal people are falling well behind non-Aboriginal people, and in many instances things are getting much worse. And the thing that really concerns me, Jodie, is that, as we know, there are a whole lot of really well recognised causal pathways for Aboriginal kids and adults to get immersed in the justice system and eventually be incarcerated, and those closing the gap outcomes indicate that those causal pathways are still there, and, as I say, in many cases getting worse. For example, reading, writing and numeracy rates are well below the non-Aboriginal population. So are employment outcomes. For example, there's been no overall improvement in Aboriginal reading and numeracy since 2008. Means that the target for halving the gap by 2018 is not on track and won't be achieved. But the other really concerning thing, Jodie, is the health of Aboriginal people, because the report indicates that there are really high levels of Aboriginal people with undetected, treatable and preventable chronic conditions that significantly affect their life expectancy. Aboriginal people are three more times likely to have diabetes, twice as likely to have signs of chronic kidney disease, and more than four times as likely to be in advanced stages of chronic kidney disease. And in our arena, the justice arena, the stats are terrible. There's been a 57% increase between 2000 and 2013 in adult imprisonment rates, and juvenile detention rates increased sharply between 2000, 2001 and 2007, 2008, and have fluctuated since at around 24 times the rate for non-Indigenous youth. And as part of that, the proportion of adults, and you could probably include kids in this, I expect, as well, the proportion of adults reporting high or very high levels of psychological distress increased during those periods, and hospitalisations for intentional self-harm increased by 48% over this. So they're very sobering statistics, aren't they?
So let's put a human face to those stats, Pete, because I know that the legal service is seeing very young kids coming through the system. They're working with fractured families who are doing it really, really tough. Can you paint a picture for us that actually shows that the suffering and the hardship that a lot of mob are taking?
Well, you're right. Increasingly, we're acting for very young kids, and by that I mean kids 10, 11, 12 years old. They're coming to court facing, in some instances, incredibly serious charges. But you can back it in that with nearly every single kid coming to court in those circumstances, they're coming from those fractured family backgrounds you speak about, where there's perhaps a parent, sometimes dad, who's in jail or dead, having died early. There'll be no employment, so the family's surviving on Centrelink. There may be issues around domestic violence. There's certainly usually issues around drug and alcohol abuse that then links in with mental health issues. The child will almost certainly be not going to school and not done for a long period of time. So there's issues around literacy, numeracy, and future prospects for employment, training and education. I mean, they're non-existent if you're not going to school at 10. We all know that. So these are the sorts of kids that are being funneled into the criminal justice system, and many of them end up in custody, as we know, and custody's not the answer. You're not going to have those life supports, that nurturing, that assistance that's desperately needed for someone to lead a productive life in a custodial setting. At the other end of the spectrum, we've still got ongoing issues around the way the Aboriginal community in WA is policed. It's not uncommon, and it's happened very recently, where, for example, we've had a 10-year-old kid who's on some very minor stealing charges and a little bit more serious burglary charge, but the stealing involves shoplifting, twisties and cool drink and that sort of stuff, on a 24-hour curfew, which seems to me to just be setting the kid up for failure. He's allowed out of the house if he's in the company of his responsible adult. He got picked up in the back lane behind the house where he was living, where the responsible adult was sticking their head over the back over the fence to keep an eye on him. The police swoop, they're arrested for breaching their bail condition. They're locked up in a regional police lockup, driven 3 or 4 hours to another court in police custody, sit in another cell for half the day before their matter gets dealt with by a magistrate. So these sort of kids are being treated really punitively by the system, and that has a really negative impact as well, because what sort of message does it send to them about attitudes towards police, to authority? And you've got all that hardening that goes with being locked up in police cells and being transported in police vehicles and things of that nature, which, in my view, gets completely overlooked so much of the time, that really negative, devastating impact of being imprisoned often just doesn't seem to feature on the radar.
How does WA fare, Pete? Because we continue to hear horror stories about kids being held in adult lockups over the weekend and the treatment of a lot of our young people here in WA that seems to leave the rest of the nation absolutely shocked that this sort of stuff is going on.
Oh, you talk to people in the eastern states, you're right, Jodie, you talk to people in the eastern states who are involved with these sort of things, and they're almost constantly gobsmacked by what goes on here. And the thing that really troubles me is that no matter how much exposure there is of these sorts of things in reports, in media commentary, in every single area that you can think of, there's talk at the top about the need for change, but it very rarely is translated into what goes on the ground in the lives of so many of our clients.
So what we want to do is we actually want to reduce the amount of people who actually need the services of the Aboriginal Legal Service, and that, I guess, involves government sitting down with organisations like the Aboriginal Legal Service and other Aboriginal organisations who don't have to reinvent the wheel. We know strategies that work. We've answered report after report after report of what will work, what can work. Justice reinvestment is a big term that we've been talking about in recent programs. It doesn't seem to be rocket science to make some small leeway.
Look, none of it's rocket science. It just requires a political will and commitment and the necessary resources to be put into these sort of strategies. Because at the end of the day, and this is what makes a lot of what our work involves, especially with kids, so terribly depressing, is that when a child reaches ALS, a lot of the time it's the end of the line. And a lot of the work that we do is finger in the dike stuff. So I'll go out a day nearly every week to Banksia Hill Juvenile Detention Centre, and I'll talk to a young kid who's been locked up and has reached the end of the line. And you talk to so many of the boys in particular, and there's a couple of things that really, really get them going. And one of them is football. And, you know, there's simple strategies, if properly supported by government and the private sector, with something involving light football, which could turn a young life around. And you're quite right. If the life's turned around or pointed in the right direction at the right stage, they won't be coming to us. They won't need us because they'll be living healthy, productive lives.
Peter Collins, Director of Legal Services. And I can't believe you got through saying the F word, Pete, without mentioning your mighty footy team. What are the Hawks up for 2015, you reckon?
Oh, we're well on track for the three-peat, Jody.
It was an absolute miracle that Pete Collins got through that without mentioning his team. But on the subject of footy, yeah, there is some great programs that are up and running, and a brand new one, well, pretty new, is running in the Subiaco district of Western Australia. And to let us know more about it, I would like to welcome to the program a fella by the name of Rowan. How are you going, Rowan?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Introduce yourself and tell us where you're from, because I know you're from regional WA, down south. Introduce us and let us know a bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. My name's Rowan Blee. I'm the Lions District Development Officer employed by the West Australian Football Commission. I am a country boy, that's right. I'm from the small town of Manjimup in the lower southwest of WA, about 3.5 hours south of Perth. Yeah, I moved up to Perth to study sport management, and my passion was always football, and I guess my ideal career was working in the footy industry, and here I am today.
Okay, working on a really exciting program.
Yes.
And you are the district manager?
A district development officer.
Yeah. So tell us about the Mooditch Lions program that you're involved with.
Yeah, look, the Mooditch Lions program, we've been up and running since late November last year. The Mooditch Lions program is an exciting new program targeting disengaged Aboriginal youth aged between 12 and 15 years, living within the Subiaco district, and particularly within the northeast corridor of our Subiaco football district. The northeast corridor for us encompasses some of the more disadvantaged suburbs in the metro area, such as Balga, Girraween, Kundoola, Merangaroo, Mirrabooka, Nullumara and Westminster, all located sort of east side of Wanneroo Road between there and Mirrabooka Avenue sort of thing. So, look, for us, it was a need that we've identified. We've got a quite a high percentage of Aboriginal people within our community, particularly within our northeast corridor. So, look, we decided to do something about it and to get more kids playing footy. For those who don't know, and I'm sure everyone listening to this radio station today does know this, but Mooditch is the Noongar term for strong and great, and I guess one of the key focuses for this program is to develop these young participants and Aboriginal men into strong community leaders and role models while teaching them a range of life skills, using football as a vehicle, which we know these young boys really love.
You had a meeting last night. How did it go?
Yeah, look, we had a training session last night. We changed our night to suit and take advantage of a community visit from the Fremantle Dockers out at Barry Britton Oval in Balga. We had a very special guest in Peter Collins come along and speak to the boys, talking about the justice system and the type of trouble that kids can get into for making little mistakes in the community. So that was really, really beneficial for us. But we also then had some special guests in the form of the Fremantle Dockers. We had five players in Ryan Crowley, Josh DeLuca and a few others. Unfortunately, the captain, Matthew Pavlich, wasn't able to make it out for the day, but the boys had fun just the same. We experienced record numbers of about 15 or 16 boys who we really are targeting disengaged Aboriginal youth. A lot of these kids are already involved in the football system, but one of the key focuses is re-engaging these kids in the community through school participation and football participation. So it was really pleasing to see some record numbers. The Mooditch Lions team and program will be participating in the Nicky Widmar Football Carnival on Sunday the 1st of March down at Bendigo Bank Stadium in Mandra. So the boys are really looking forward to that.
I find that our young sports people today are incredible role models, whether that's what they set out to be or not. Their presence somewhere has a huge impact on young people. I know that I took my 12-year-old across to meet some of the Scorchers a couple of weeks ago, some of her cricket greats and, Ashton Agar and all these people, and the way those sports people dealt with young people, it was like they were treating every young person as, you know, you're the only one here, and then we'll move on, and then that next person's the only one here. But and footy's a lot the same, isn't it? When you're talking to people like Anthony Grover and all that, they really do give back to community.
Absolutely. Look, and Anthony Grover's the coach of our program, and he's been really engaged within our district. He's a Balga boy. He grew up in Balga playing for the Balga Junior Footy Club. So, look, he's a fantastic ambassador for our district. He's also employed by the Department of Sport and Recreation. I'd just like to make mention and thank the Department of Sport and Recreation for their support for this program. Anthony's been fantastic for the boys. He's definitely a community figure and a community icon that all the boys look up to. And, you know, even though we had some of the Dockers out there, Anthony still certainly led the way and sort of was putting together the, you know, the session for the guys. So we also had Josh DeLuca and Ryan Crowley, two ex-Subiaco Football Club league players. And Josh DeLuca, most recently a Waffle Premiership star. So it was fantastic to have that connection back to the Subi Footy Club. And boys that have grown up within our district. Absolutely fantastic.
So what else happened last night? Obviously you had some key speakers and talking to the young people about what the program involves and the training and stuff. What was the vibe amongst the young kids?
Very excited. I think we had a few new faces that were a bit hesitant at first. We sort of asked them to look, if you'd like to get involved and get involved in the training session, you know, sign up for our program, sign up for the Moonich Lions. There was some reluctance from the boys. The sort of, you know, when we experienced that when dealing with a lot of our Aboriginal communities, there's a reluctance to engage in these programs. They don't want to commit to too many, you know, training sessions and things like that. But, you know, when I dangled the carrot of getting to play at half time for the upcoming Indigenous All-Stars match at Medibank Stadium, they very quickly put pen to paper.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I imagine, because the training happens in Balga?
Correct, yes. Yeah. So we're training. Last night we changed it up so that we could take advantage of that community visit. But we train on Wednesday nights at 3:30 at Barry Britton Reserve in Balga, and that goes right up until the Nicky Winmar Carnival. So at the moment it's trying to pull some numbers together. So if you've got any players living within the Subiaco district between 12 and 15 who want to get involved and participate in the carnival, we strongly recommend they come on board.
I just got a feeling you're going to have your regulars who rock up every week, then you're going to gradually get more and more people on those sidelines going, how do I get involved in this, eh?
Oh, look, with any football club, a lot of people don't rock up to the last week before the first game, do they? So to avoid all the pre-season training. So, look, fingers crossed that we get some really good numbers and we have a really successful carnival as well.
So this is open to 11 to 15-year-old males, Aboriginal kids living in the Subiaco district, but as you mentioned, that northern corridor,
lots of
Aboriginal families along that way, and head along and get involved in training and matches with skilled coaches. There'll be injury prevention information, education, life skills. I'm sure you're going to make a lot of new friends if you get along as well. Peter Collins, don't you wish there was something like this around when you were 11 to 15?
Oh, absolutely, Jody. I don't know if it would have made any difference in my footy career, but there you go. But look, I'd like to endorse Rowan's program. I think it's a fantastic program. It's been very well considered. And the personnel involved, including Rowan, are absolutely first class. One of the things that concerns me, though, is that this has come through the WA Footy Commission, and like all government, state government agencies, they've been subjected to some funding cuts. And so resources and finances are an absolute premium. And the program's in desperate need of further funding. And one of the important aspects of it is that Rowan and his team and others at the Footy Commission are hoping to be able to roll this program across the Perth metro area and eventually over time, if possible, across the state. So it's not just going to be confined to this northeast corridor and the Subi Footy Club catchment area. So if I could appeal to the listeners out there, if anybody has any spare money, if anybody from some of the big companies, perhaps some of the big resource companies is listening, this is a wonderful program. It's deserving of your full support. And if you can put your hands in your pocket, that'd be fantastic. Can I give one little example of what the program needs? Rowan was telling me before we started that the boys would like to go to the open training session for the Indigenous All-Stars game, which is on at 4 p.m. on Thursday week. They also have to be transported to Clontarf to register for the Nicky Winmar Cup, and there's also a need to transport them to the game. Now, the program doesn't have a bus. So if they had access to a minibus, either someone bought it for them or loaned it to them, that'd make life incredibly, make life a lot easier, because as we know, especially at the ALS, issues around transportation, getting to places are huge, and people often don't have access to cars like more privileged people like I do. So that's the sort of resourcing and assistance that the program needs in order to enable these kids to fully engage, because they'll get a huge thrill, I'm sure, going to watch the Aboriginal All-Star, potentially people like Buddy Franklin, Cyril Rioli, Shawnee Burgoyne, and those sort of people, watch them train, but also to go to the Nicky Winmar Cup. It's absolutely critical.
You can't underestimate, Pete, those are the sorts of experiences that can be life-changing.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And then the positive flow-on effects, not just on that young person, but mum, dad, auntie, uncle, siblings. It's all just sort of saying, hang on a minute, we can do great things, and it just sometimes needs that little boost to get started, hey?
That's right. So I appeal to everyone out there, if you've got contacts with people in the resource industry or other areas of the private sector, get in contact with them. They can ring me at the ALS and I can put them in contact with Rowan. I think it's a wonderful program, and it's something where I think the ALS, not only has it given its support to the program already, but it can benefit some of our clients, Jody, because it may be further down the track that we can say, well, if this kid's bailed to the Mortgage Lines program and has to participate in what the program has to offer, that might be a basis for keeping some kid out of custody and turning their life around.
Rowan Blee, Subiaco District Development Officer. The program is up and running, but it's not too late for young people to get involved?
No, look, if you want to register, you can give me a call on the Subiaco Football Club. The number there is 9208 9999, or you can contact me via email on rblee@wafc.com.au. You can also visit the Subiaco Football Club website at www.subiacofc.com.au. But just Mortgage Lines is only one of our programs that, that we've got in line with a larger strategy for our Northeast Corridor, which we're calling the Northeast Corridor Engagement Strategy. The Subiaco District Football Development Council recently developed the strategy. And to give you a bit of a picture of who the Subiaco District is, we're one of nine metropolitan football districts in WA with a population of over 191,000. We span across three local government areas of City of Stirling, City of Joondalup and City of Wanneroo. The purpose of our strategy is really to tackle some of the societal issues that we're experiencing in that Northeast Corridor due to the area's low socioeconomic status. That area in particular has a really high percentage of Aboriginal kids, as I've said, or people, 3%, which where I believe the state average is about 1%. So those numbers alone are quite significant, and also a very multicultural community within that area. So we're looking at expanding the number of opportunities for people to engage in football, because we know the benefits of that. We have another program starting up tonight. It's the sister program of the Mortgage Lions called the Jukun Lions. So for those out there who don't know, the word Jukun means sister or cousin in Noongar, which is a very fitting name for our program, given that last year we had our very first representative side, a female Aboriginal representative side for the district that participated in the Kirby Bentley Cup. And basically, it's the sister program to the Mortgage Lions. We're targeting 13 to 17 year old girls, and our goal is to transition these girls into the AFL Youth Girls Competition through our partnership with the Coastal Titans Women's Football Club. So that starts tonight, 3:30, at the same venue, Barry Britton Reserve in Balga. Any young girls living within the Subiaco District between 13 and 17, Aboriginal girls that are keen to come on down, you can contact me on the same details. Those details, again, was the Subi Footy Club, 9208 9999, or Rowan Blee, my email, rblee@wafc.com.au.
Rowan, just before we let you go, I want you to run through those northern suburbs again.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think, you know, sometimes if people hear Subiaco Footy Club and they've just tuned in, they might not be aware of which areas you're targeting.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, our northeast corridor, as I said, was some of the more disadvantaged suburbs in the metropolitan area, those being the suburbs of Balga, Girraween, Kundoola, Marangaroo, Mirrabooka, Nollumara and Westminster, all located east side of Wanneroo Road. And I suppose something that I believe Noongar Radio is supporting is the Indigenous All-Stars match that is coming up. Just a reminder to everyone in the community, on Thursday the 19th, they have an open training session from 4 to 6. The Footy Means Business program will be running some barbecues and looking to do a bit of a community event, and then the game, of course, starting at 6 o'clock on the Friday.
It sounds like it's heading into footy season. Girls and boys, young women, if you want to know more, give Rowan a call, 92089999. Rowan Blee and Peter Collins, thank you for your time on our Law Matters program. Good luck with it all. Sounds fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.